A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello. You're listening to BFN. This is the podcast about infertility, IVF, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Gabby.
And I'm Emma, and we're both card-carrying members of the Infertility Club.
Jumper. Are we doing that thing where we refuse to put the heating on?
Yes. Yeah. I'm refusing. We've like our limit in our house is October, although I did put it on for half an hour this morning.
Oh, did you? Spicy.
Yeah. Because it was so cold.
Yeah. I thought about doing it just so I could wash, so dry some clothes.
Yeah, drying clothes is a real issue at this time of year.
It really is.
Yeah, I've got like a little electric fan heater, which I might implement.
Extra jumpers.
Yeah, extra jumpers are good. In my office, there is a bed, and I have just literally been sitting in the bed doing my work.
Oh, mate, that's not good. That's not good for productivity, is it?
No, but it's very comfy.
Oh, maybe I should do that. I also have a bed next to me where I work.
Yeah, just get right in. Here. It's so warm. And also, because it's a single bed with a double duvet, the duvet's like folded in half, and it's just toasty.
Wow, wow. There we go, guys. That's your winter tip, keeping warm this winter if you work from home. Just get into bed.
Yeah. I've just written a really hard-hitting article from the bed. The bed has sausage dogs on it.
And you were like, as I sit here writing very important economic information from my bed chamber.
Yeah, exactly. With the sausage dogs.
With the sausage dogs.
Yeah, so what are we doing today, Gabs?
Well, I hate to say that we're, amongst other things, bringing this series to a close.
We are. It's sad. I'm sad. Are you sad?
I am sad. Yeah, I am sad. This is the last episode, guys. But it's been a good series, hasn't it?
I think it's been a corker. We started with Emma Barnett.
We did. Who's just had some interesting news, if you were interested to know how she's getting on.
Yeah, look on the eye, paper. And we've just had some great guests all the way through, haven't we?
We have had some great guests, and we're finishing on another great guest.
On a corker.
Absolute corker. Who is it, Emma?
It's Izzy Judd, who was one of the very first kind of celebrities to talk about infertility. I think she's like, I really think she's a bit of a trailblazer, to be honest. So if you haven't heard of her, unlikely, I would say, but she is married to Harry Judd, who was in McFly. People of our age might remember.
Is in McFly.
Is in McFly.
Yeah.
He came in halfway through the recording, and I did have to stop myself from saying, has he been to the year 3000? I didn't say that. She was a real trailblazer in that she talked about her infertility. She wrote about it. She did a podcast about it.
Yes.
Called Let's All Talk Fertility.
Yeah. Her book is called Dare to Dream.
Yeah. So she wrote a book about it. And, it was just really great to talk to her because I think she's probably a bit like us, like a bit of an oversharer.
Yes. Yeah. I think she is because there's multiple layers to her sharing now, you know. Many years on, she wears her battle scars on her sleeve. Yeah. Mixed metaphors.
Yeah, massively mixed metaphor, but I really enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it too.
Yeah, she does. And she's basically like us, isn't she?
She's very like us. So it's been long overdue to have a chat with her. And so we are delighted to chat to her to bring the series to a close.
Yeah, absolutely. And then also we're talking to Professor Tim, aren't we, Gabs?
We definitely are. And he's answering the question, are there certain types of endometriosis that don't impact implantation, or is it all a cause for concern?
Yes.
A little bit self-serving question there, Emma, maybe?
Yeah. Was that my question? I can't remember. I think it was someone else's.
No, I think it was yours.
Was it my question?
I think it's yours, but it was a good one.
It was a good one. It's a good job that I had access to the answer, like at the beginning of the series.
Yes.
but yeah, I think it is an important question for everyone.
Definitely.
Someone very close to me has just been diagnosed with endometriosis and is having a major freak out about this kind of thing. So
really, gosh.
Good one to go over.
Yes, definitely. Other notices. We recently appeared on the Emma Gunn's podcast.
How could I have forgotten about talking about that?
I don't know how you did.
God, that was fun, wasn't it?
It was loads of fun. I really like Emma.
Yeah,
she's great. It's my second favourite Emma.
Thank you. I assume I'm the first.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, I'm not like third.
No.
she's just, it was a really good interview, wasn't it? I just really, like, sometimes we do interviews and they feel a bit like disconnected, and that's probably because we're in weird moods. But that one just really... like I felt really able to share.
Yeah, it had a nice flow. And it's good to speak to her. It's interesting because she has no interest in creating family and fertility. And she doesn't want children. So it did make for an interesting kind of dynamic, I think.
Yeah. We were lecturing her, basically.
And this. But yeah, that's out this week. So as soon as you listen to this, if you haven't already listened to Emma Gunn's, go and listen to that too.
Yeah. And at the end of the podcast, we're talking again, and you probably don't need to worry about trigger warnings in the same way that you have recently.
Yes.
Although we will be talking about embryo disposal, I guess. So
yes, but yeah. Pregnancy trigger warnings.
Yes. So please enjoy Izzy. And in the meantime, if you would like to contact us, you can Instagram us.
At Big Fat Negative.
You can Twitter us.
At Big Fat Negative.
You can email us.
BigFatNegativePodcast@gmail.com.
We would love it if you would rate and review the podcast.
Yes, absolutely. And we'd also love it if you bought our book, if you haven't already. It's rather good.
Yes, and available at all good bookshops.
Indeed, including my local one in Ramsgate, which is very exciting.
Oh, that is very exciting. In the meantime, please enjoy this. Firstly, Izzy, have you had an okay day?
I have had an okay day. actually, do you know what? We went, we live on the route of the royal procession.
Oh, wow.
I actually took the kids, and Harry and I, we went up to watch. It was really moving, actually. Really moving.
Yes,
we did that today.
Oh, well, that looked amazing. Like, I watched the entire thing. As I was just saying, Gabby, I got under my biggest quilt and refused to move for the duration.
Wonderful. I wish I could have done that, but as I say, we've just moved house. I've got no television,
no
internet. So I was watching it on my tiny phone, like hanging out a window, trying to get the reception to watch it. I love the music.
Right. Yeah. There were a lot of really good shots, especially when they hit Windsor. Is it called the Long Walk? Where everybody was marching perfectly, and like the entire column of soldiers was swaying at the same time in the same direction. Oh. And it was very pleasing to watch.
Yes, through that kind of archway.
Yeah. Well, Izzy, I don't know how many times you've listened to VFM, but we always start by asking people to tell us about their journey.
Okay. So I got married to my husband, Harry, in 2012. And shortly after, I was really keen to start a family. And as I'm sure I don't even need to say in your company, you think it's just the easiest thing in the world, and mm-hmm. all you're taught is how not to get pregnant. And so you think when you will get pregnant, all will be well. I had no indication that there might have been a problem before. But initially, after we got married, Harry was like, what's the rush? I was like, well, we've been together quite a long time. I'd quite like to have a family. I'm a little bit older than Harry. Anyway, about 6 months in, he said, okay. And so, weirdly, I went away with Harry on a retreat. And it was the first month that we were, I suppose, actively trying. Mm-hmm. And when we got back, I was due my period, and my period didn't come, which was like the first time in, well, for, I mean, ages. And so we just assumed, you know, hey presto, like one, we're good to go. But actually I was in the bathroom and I, you know, peed on those lovely sticks. Yeah. And Harry had the camera ready. We'd literally just thought, oh, it's a given. And it was negative. And then the Googling, I think that was probably when I became such good friends with Google.
or enemies, yeah. One or the other.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. And I just, I was just went into this absolute panic after 1 month, which just looking back is just, but I think it was because I had such little knowledge about it. Nobody was talking about it. There was no education about it, nothing. So I just really panicked, and I didn't have my period. So this went into actually months of no cycle. Just my period just didn't come back and didn't come back. So we couldn't even try, which had a whole new other level of kind of frustration. Ended up going to see a doctor, and feel very fortunate that I was able to do that so quickly, privately. And basically we discovered that I had polycystic ovaries. And from there I went on Clomid, and I don't know if either of you have experienced that, but I found it quite a difficult
awful
medication to be on. And I felt very depressed very quickly, like looking back, and my mood changed, and I felt very, very bloated and uncomfortable. None of my clothes were fitting. My skin got really bad. I wasn't responding to the medication. And so every time I went for a scan to see if it was working, it wasn't working, so they upped my dose. Anyway, basically 6 months on that, nothing. I think I basically reached a breaking point and came downstairs. At this point, at least, I was having regular cycles, so we were able to actually try. And so I came downstairs after goodness knows how many kind of negative tests, and sort of broke down with Harry. In fact, it was more just I felt completely numb emotion of, like, just didn't know which way to turn. And he sort of, you know, held on to me and was like, look, you know, worst case scenario, me and you. And it was a moment of, I have sort of stopped looking at you through this whole process, because all I've been focusing on is baby, and there's someone else in this. And I'd really lost sight of that. And so I decided I'd have a complete 6 month detox. When I say detox, I mean of, obviously it's very difficult to say, right, we're not trying anymore. Of course not. But I shifted my focus, I suppose. I knew that IVF was probably going to be the next route. I suppose in a way I thought, well, I'll use this opportunity to get myself in the right space, kind of physically and mentally, the best headspace I could get into. before we started IVF, and went for my first round, miscarried the first at like 7 weeks, but it felt so much more than that.
Gosh, it doesn't, you know, people always say, oh, it's early, and you're like, well, that doesn't mean anything when you're losing it, you know. It's really hard.
Yeah, really. Yeah, I mean, I will never I'll never forget that sensation. And I suppose it sort of takes away that ability to enjoy any subsequent pregnancies. You know, and if anybody is listening to this, there was something that I used to do, which I found really kind of helpful, was that I just used to put, if this is your thing, but I used to put one hand on my heart and one hand on my belly where, you know, baby would be. So say this was when I was pregnant afterwards, and I would just say, you know, all is calm, all is well, you are safe. And I would just repeat it over and over again and breathe. Just to get myself through that feeling. So, you know, because I realize when you listen to podcasts and everything can feel quite triggering, and can't it? And you sort of, you know how fragile the topic is and the conversation is. So hopefully that's sort of a comforting thing, which I found a comfort anyway. But then we did go on with a frozen embryo transfer, was my daughter Lola. Here we are. And then following that, just about a year later, I fell pregnant with my son, which was a complete shock, really, to be honest. I was like, is this a joke? And I also found out on New Year's Day. You couldn't write it.
How did you cope with that? Fight like that shock, because obviously, you know, at this point you'd also come out about your story publicly. How did that kind of sit with you? Was it just, I mean, did it take a while?
I felt very conscious of it, because there are so many sentences that you hear, which everybody listening is familiar with, you know, just relax, go on holiday. She had IVF and then she fell pregnant naturally. And I thought, oh no, I've fallen into that category or that sentence. And I was quite worried about sharing, because I think not only had I just written Dare to Dream and was, you know, sharing my story, I didn't know how to really approach it and how to do it sensitively and without it feeling like I was one of those lucky ones.
Yeah.
Actually, when I did talk about it, I felt an amazing sense of hope. I think people felt it gave them hope, and that, you know, and it was like with writing Dare to Dream, you know, I was quite, the night before publication, I was sort of saying to Harry, oh my goodness, you know, have I done the right thing? And what will people think? And, you know, naturally you have your, I'm a human being. So it's, you know, I've put my kind of myself out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I said to him, look, if it helps one person, I'll feel I've done my bit. And I suppose in the same way, sharing that news, it's like, if it's giving someone hope, then that's enough for me.
I'm always kind of surprised by how kind people are about successes about like that, because I'm just so bitter usually.
Yeah.
But other people are really kind.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I remember when I miscarried from our first round of IVF, my sister-in-law and my brother fell pregnant. And fell pregnant, as if you just fall, you know.
I just tripped.
My brother called Harry, and I thought, that's really strange, he normally calls me first, you know, and if he can't get hold of me he might call Harry. And Harry just said, look, I'm sorry, you're going to have to speak to Izzy, and handed the phone over to me. And Magnus told me that he and his wife were expecting. And I at that moment I was, the anger, like the complete, like, but it was more the anger that I had just been told I was going to be an auntie and I couldn't be happy. And it was the feeling that everything was stripping those moments from me, from the fact that I was, you know, it was my first niece or nephew, and how sad that I was in that state, that I couldn't feel happy. And I found it really, really difficult to sort of talk about it or be at family things, or it was just really painful. And then they went on to lose the baby. Weeks, just awful. And so from that moment on, I sort of made a promise to myself that if I saw somebody that was pregnant or opened a magazine and saw an announcement or whatever it was, that I would always say to myself, you don't know the full story, Izzy. You don't know their full story.
And kind
of wish that pregnancy healthiness and happiness. And however, you know, obviously there were days when that was incredibly difficult, but I tried to hold on to that as almost a way of, I don't know, for that first niece or nephew that might have been sort of for them.
Mm-hmm. That's really sweet, I think. And I think you're absolutely right. That is the thing to try and remember. And I think, you know, us of all people, we should know that. But often it's so easy to forget because you just see pregnant women as other, you know, they're like different to you. And you're kind of, it's hard to think, gosh, they might all be, you know, suffering the same things as me. But yeah, it's a nice thing.
I still, when I walk, where I live is just, you know, buggy central. And I still, when I see somebody pregnant, get that pang. It's really strange. Like, even though I've gone on to have children, I still get that moment of, was it easy? I don't know if that makes any sense at all, but even now, even when you go on to have a family, it just, it's always with you. It's always sitting with you somewhere.
Absolutely.
And the guilt of finding things difficult as a mother, or not finding every second enjoyable, or not it not being as you imagined it to be, all those things sit really heavy and almost make things, you know, I think even more of a challenge to sort of navigate.
Yeah, massively. Like, and it's always there. It just doesn't go. It makes it's really hard. Izzy, I feel like, you know, you were one of the first people with any who was kind of well known to really share their story of this. What made you decide to do that?
So, gosh, that kind of gave me kind of chills thinking about that, because it really was like, when I was going through it, nobody was talking about it. Mm-hmm. Nobody. Like, and there wasn't really social media. There wasn't any platform I could turn to.
No.
I felt ashamed, and I just assumed that IVF clinic were for 40-year-olds, and you know, it was just this sort of whole complete world that felt completely isolating. And I'd lived it for however long, and all the books I'd read were medical. There was nobody speaking to me.
No.
Other than a very distant family friend who had been through it, who very kindly spoke to me and gave me some brilliant advice. But other than that, nothing. And so because Harry and I had our wedding published in Hello, when I found out I was pregnant, they asked if I wanted to do a pregnancy announcement. And I just basically said, I can't do this without fully explaining what we've been through. Would feel so wrong, having been that person that's picked up that magazine and seen another happy couple, you know. And so Harry totally supported, I suppose, when we made that decision together, and because obviously he's just as much part of it, and to talk about the miscarriage and to talk about the fact that we had had IVF and that it had been a struggle. And then it was just unbelievable, the response back from that, even from people I knew who suddenly were picking up the phone and messages I was getting. It was just, it was unbelievable how common it was. And yet I had felt completely alone.
I mean, we see so many women in the public eye sharing their stories now. Like, I remember Jessie J coming out and talking about it, and I was like, what? But there was no one. Or it will get like a cursory mention. like it wouldn't get much. It would be like, so and so did IVF, and then your natural assumption is, oh, if she did IVF then she got a baby.
Yes,
like no one talked about it not working.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's well, I mean, fast forward and you've kind of broken the silence on something else as well. I'm probably gonna absolutely butcher this phrase, but you've suffered from hypothalamic amenorrhea. Is that how we're saying
amenorrhea? Hypothalamic amenorrhea.
I knew I was gonna
Right. Can you talk
to us about that?
So of all the things I have spoken openly about, this was by far the hardest thing to talk about. But basically, hypothalamic amenorrhea is over-exercising, under-eating, and stress, and adrenaline and all those sorts of things mixed in. And I, after I had Kit, I lost a lot of weight naturally. I think having been on hormones before my pregnancy with Lola and then going through two pregnancies quite quickly, I think something shifted within my metabolic system, and I just lost quite a dramatic amount of weight. And, you know, inevitably, wow, you look amazing, you've had two kids, da, da, da. And having spent a lot of time feeling really quite miserable about my body, not just from appearance, but actually more so an internal failure, an internal feeling of not working properly. For the first time, I felt good about myself. And it became a control. It became, you know, I've spoken openly about anxiety, and I've lived with anxiety since I was very little, and so food and exercise became my next way, I suppose, of controlling my anxiety. And so I also had two children under two. There was a lot of stress going on with work, in terms of I was trying to work and obviously with the two little ones, both in nappies and full on. And so I was basically adrenaline, anxious, exercising, not really eating, and I had no periods. So I was completely dormant after Kit. I had no periods for a good 3 years. So I went to the doctor, and I never put two and two together. So I never thought that. I didn't think, because although I wasn't eating enough, I was eating really well. So from sort of an outsider's perspective, you would just think it was just really healthy lifestyle. She's exercising, mm-hmm. She's eating. But actually, it was a very, very unhealthy lifestyle. But when I went to see a GP and a doctor, you know, my BMI was normal. Looking at me, there wouldn't have been anything to suggest I looked underweight. But there clearly was, you know, there clearly was a problem, because I wasn't having any periods. So I went on sort of synthetic hormones, that because basically my body went into menopause. So my estrogen was really low, and all the side effects that come with that. I had a bone scan and I was osteopenic, which is basically this stage before osteoporosis, where your bones are really weak because you haven't got enough estrogen. That was completely because of hormones. Mm-hmm. But still, nothing was picked up about the hypothalamic amenorrhea, which isn't very recognized here, but it is in the States a lot more as an actual sort of condition. And I went for a walk. I'd taken the kids to nursery this one morning, and random. I'm a real creature of habit, but that morning I was like, I'm going to go to another coffee shop. Oh. So I went to this other coffee shop at home. I know. I went to a different coffee shop, and this girl came up to me and was like, "Just wanted to say thank you so much for your podcast. You know, it really helped. We've had similar experiences, you know, and we got chatting, and she basically told me about hypothalamic amenorrhea, and all these like alarm bells were going off in my head. I was like, that sounds like me. And obviously, yeah, it was really like, oh my God, what? Like, it was a really kind of surreal moment. I talked to her and she said, go and buy the book, No Period, Now What? And I went straight to my bookshop. I bought it, read it, and was literally just reading it out loud to Harry, just saying, Harry, listen to this. And it really was. And it was scary because I didn't want to put on weight and I didn't want to stop exercising and I didn't want to admit that I had a problem. It was by far sort of my biggest personal challenge, from being somebody that feels quite open. Like I can talk about things. It was something which I found deeply embarrassing, and I was really frightened to talk about it. But anyway, from that moment, I followed the recovery process in that book, and I started to eat a lot more. I just said to Harry, you sort dinner now, you sort the food, just put it in front of me. Stopped exercising. I literally just stopped completely. Wow. And I think that also fed into, when you're diagnosed with polycystic ovaries, I shouldn't eat this, you shouldn't eat that, you're probably...
Yeah, there's a lot of dietary stuff.
There's a lot of dietary stuff. And actually, mm-hmm. I think that fed into it all as well. And I was very fortunate. A month later, literally to the day, I had my period.
Wow.
The first time in 3 years. Yeah.
It's amazing, how sensitive the body is, isn't it?
Yeah. And actually, if I look back to the time when I was trying to conceive Lola, yes, okay, I wasn't in the same state of perhaps food and exercise, but I was certainly anxious and I certainly had a lot of adrenaline pumping around me. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder whether all along there's been something there which I just never knew about, because I didn't have any of the other symptoms of polycystic ovaries. Yeah. I didn't have long cycles. I didn't have excess hair. I didn't find it difficult to lose weight. It was, I just think that personally, I mean, I'm obviously no doctor, but just from my own sort of experience of going into this more, was that I just don't think my body thought it was safe to have a baby, because for so long I've been in fight or flight mode. Mm. And I just think I just wasn't, yeah, I just don't think my body felt safe.
Crazy. Mm. And was kind of part of this spurred on by the fact that you kind of knew you wanted to try for a third? Was that on your mind at this point?
Yes, that and ironically health, because, you know, if you don't have a period, it's, yeah there's that. I was 37 or whatever. It's, you know, it's not right. And also, just I felt really weird not having a cycle. I didn't really have any of those highs or lows in the month. You know, I didn't, I felt dormant in many ways. So there was that aspect. And also Harry and I were talking about another baby. And we were also talking about, because I have one frozen embryo left from my round with Lola, sitting at the clinic, which I'm sure... Okay. Many people, there's that dilemma. But when I spoke to my wonderful clinic, who have been just so supportive, their advice was to try naturally, because the thing was, because I had got my cycles back naturally, to then undergo a medicated cycle, obviously, as we know, then might have disrupted what was actually going on, because I hadn't even tried naturally. Yes. But because I had this real pull to this embryo, because I was like, you know, that could have been Lola that I'd never met. And I had a big kind of emotional torment about it. Whereas Harry was a lot more black and white. It took me a little bit of time to sort of come to that conclusion. And also it had been COVID times and I felt actually the clinics were very stretched and there were people more in need at that particular moment to take up those appointments than me. So I think all those sorts of things kind of factored in to that decision.
It's hard, isn't it? Because we've been talking about this a lot lately, is that kind of the embryos that we have are kind of, they're always there. They're kind of spectres in our lives that other, you know, kind of people that don't do IVF don't have this kind of dilemma, this kind of constantly thinking about them and wondering what you're going to do about them. It's an interesting one that we're kind of unique about as a community.
Yeah. And I went back to see where they are. I don't know, have you ever seen how they're stored?
The tanks.
And they took me to my embryo and I was like, just put it back, you know, like in me, as it were. I was just like, oh my goodness, this is really, you know, and it was just Judd and the number and the ice kind of came out and, you know, it was a real moment of, gosh, you know, and I struggle with that. But I think I will naturally get to a point where I will feel at peace to kind of make a decision about what to do. But I certainly don't feel there yet.
Yeah. We spoke to someone last week about it and she said that a counsellor had said to her, you need to be 100% about this.
Yeah.
And she was like, there's no way I could ever be 100%.
No.
But she also said, don't rush it. I think that's the advice that I've taken on board. Don't rush it. It's cool. Yeah. Just keep paying for a bit longer.
Yeah.
Just pay the money. And kind of back to the hypothalamic amenorrhea. Do you feel like it's talked about enough? Do you feel like it needs to be talked about more? Like, is it quite common or surprisingly common?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder with your listeners whether anybody's there going, you know, with any alarm bells going on for them. I don't know. I definitely think it needs to be talked about more. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, yes, we've sort of touched on lifestyle, haven't we, with fertility, but it's almost feeding what hypothalamic amenorrhea wants. So when I was diagnosed with polycystic ovaries, and actually talks about it in the book, No Period Now What, about how actually all the things you do that you think you're doing to treat polycystic ovaries is actually exacerbating the problem of hypothalamic amenorrhea. So for me, for example, I was cutting out dairy, I was cutting out wheat, I was cutting all things out. I was exercising regularly. And obviously there needs to, of course, going into fertility treatment, making yourself sort of from the physical aspect, I think it's more to do with mentally how you feel. And obviously when we eat well and exercise well, we do feel better, of course, but there is a balance. And, you know, if you're in that state where it's like, I'm not having that cake or I'm not having that chocolate, I'm not having any of those moments of joy, then that's going to, in time, you know, sort of affect. So, and I think the anxiety, and one of the things that I found very difficult, and Harry used to get so kind of really felt for me in those situations, was when people would say, you know, Izzy's just, you know, she just needs to not get stressed and relax and take a holiday. But my natural default as a person is to worry. You know, it's been my way since forever. Mm-hmm. So for somebody to sort of say that is like trying to alter my personality completely.
That's not who I am.
Exactly. I do think that it should absolutely be investigated more and taken more seriously. People's lifestyles when there are fertility issues, for sure.
Well, Izzy, we're not gonna keep you too much longer, but I think we'd be interested to know your advice. I think on both levels, just fertility in general, what your advice to people is, and if they think that they're listening to this now and getting those alarm bells, as you say, what's the advice there as well?
Yeah, I mean, when I looked into hypothalamic amenorrhea, it was actually quite difficult to find a specialist to help me with that. So to be honest with you, the book was like my saving. It was where I got a lot of advice. And as we all know, you'll try anything. And if you think that, you know, perhaps you are living this sort of extreme fitness or food or stress or anxiety, it might be worth just picking it up. And it's by Nicola Rinaldi. And it's worth a read. And then in terms of fertility, so obviously, like, Lola is nearly seven, so many years have kind of passed for me. But what I think what I wish I knew then, and maybe it's easy for me to say it now, but was the lessons that I was learning through the process, I think I needed to learn. I think there were, a lot of the things that were incredibly challenging in going through fertility, like patience, not being in control, not knowing what was going to be the end result, what was going to happen, learning to let go, just realizing that not every day is a bed of roses.
Yeah.
All those things, now being a mum, have every single one of them is what is you're challenged with. So it's not like you kind of get the ending that you want and desire. It still carries on, that feeling. And it doesn't just all go away. And I think sometimes I felt like that was the issue. And actually, there were other things that I needed to address and learn about myself.
That's really interesting.
That having the struggles gave me the time to do.
It's funny how our struggles in life teach us things.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Definitely. And I know, obviously, it's easy when I'm talking in hindsight, but I do think that that's something I wish at the time I'd sort of allowed more space for. Yeah. Actually spending the time addressing the things that might be blocking or might be sort of challenging me.
Mm-hmm. Izzy, it's been so nice talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing this with us.
Thank you for having me.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Now, regular listeners might remember that right at the beginning of this series, I was diagnosed with endometriosis, which is great for me.
Good times.
Yeah, good times have I all. And because of that, I really, and because I was about to go into a round of IVF, I was a little bit worried about my chances of implantation. So I asked you to ask Professor Tim how exactly it would impact my round of IVF.
Yes. I mean, it is an incredibly self-serving question, but also I think one for the masses, because endometriosis is very common, more common than we realise probably. This is a very good question, Emma. So had it been so self-serving that it wasn't a good question for other people, I would have vetoed you. Yes, I'd have been like, no, Emma, think of the listeners.
If you are a very tall person whose name is Emma and who is blonde and who lives in Whitstable, what would that kind of thing?
Exactly. Yeah, so it's a good one. So yeah, have a listen, guys. Here's what he has to say.
So about 20% of women have endometriosis. It's where some of the lining of the uterus has gone back through the fallopian tubes and implants around the pelvis. So it's very common. Some women have no symptoms or no problems with endo. Some women will have pelvic pain, either during menstruation or intercourse or passing urine or opening their bowels. And some women will have fertility issues. There are four main stages of endometriosis, so stage 1, 2, 3, 4. So stage 1 is minimal, when there's just really a few dots of endometriosis. And stage 4 is severe, when sometimes it can look like the glue has been used and the pelvic organs are all stuck together. Now, when there's severe endometriosis, so stage 3 and stage 4, it's really not surprising that natural fertility can be affected, because it can be difficult for the tubes. The tubes might be stuck down, they might be blocked, they might not be able to pick up eggs from the ovaries for natural conception. When it's more the stage 1 and stage 2, and there's just a few dots of endo around the place, it's a bit more difficult to know why would that be affecting fertility. But studies have shown that if you have a laparoscopy operation and the spots of endometriosis are burnt or cut away, then the chance of natural conception afterwards does increase by about a third. So it's not a magic treatment, but it does improve fertility for more sort of lesser amounts of endometriosis. Now, the question is about implantation. So the question is, if you have endo and you have IVF, so obviously we're taking the eggs from the ovaries, we're putting the eggs and sperm together in the laboratory to make embryos, and then we're putting an embryo back into the uterus. The question is, do those women have a lower chance of implantation because they have endometriosis compared to women who don't have endometriosis? Now, it might be difficult to think, well, why would they have a lower implantation? Because by definition, endometriosis is womb lining outside of the uterine cavity. So really, there should be nothing wrong inside the uterine cavity, because that's not endometriosis. But some studies have suggested that women with endometriosis who are having IVF, surprisingly, may have a lower chance of implantation. The difficulty is knowing whether that is down to the uterus, or because women with endo, they might have ovarian damage, they might have fewer eggs collected from their ovaries, and therefore less of a choice of embryos, and therefore maybe poorer quality embryos going back, and therefore a lower implantation rate than a woman who had more eggs collected and a better choice. Overall, when we look at data, for instance, from the HFEA site, when there are hundreds of thousands of IVF cycles, and you look to see, do women with endo have a lower IVF success rate than women without endo, we don't see a difference, or if there is a difference, it's very, very small. So for my patients with endo, I'm very encouraging, really, and saying, well, if your ovarian reserve is okay and we think we're going to get a decent number of eggs, I personally wouldn't worry about the fact you have endometriosis. It's not really going to make much of a difference for you at all.
Hi, pal.
Hey, mate.
Hi.
I am, yes, I am well, thank you. Cool. Slightly stressed about all of the economic news, to the point where I'm kind of wondering whether I just delete Twitter off my phone and stop reading the news. I kind of think that might be a good way for me to maintain some mental health.
Is it making you anxious?
It's making me anxious, yeah. It's making me angry, actually, more than anxious, yeah. I think. And that's also not good for me, really.
Well, I don't want to cross promote my work, but I've just written an article where I interviewed a lot of city workers who earn a lot of money, who want to be paying more tax.
Okay.
And they're all really cross as well.
Okay, that's good. Maybe I'll go
and feeling bad. They're feeling quite bad as well. Like, they're feeling worried for the future of the United Kingdom.
Yeah. I mean, if only they were the ones that were in charge of the country rather than the people who are currently fucking up the rest of us. Anyway, aside from feeling quite angry and a bit scared, I mean, what's my news really to wrap up the series? I'm still changing my mind every day as to whether or not I want to have another baby, and it's driving me a bit mad. And yesterday, as I was walking into Waitrose on my way to go and buy some milk, I was just like, why don't I just get rid of the embryos? And then and then I don't have to think about this anymore.
Yeah.
Because I'm so on the fence and leaning towards not. Would it be better for me now at this stage to just pull the trigger? That's really not a very nice metaphor, is it?
No, but I know what you mean. And it's funny because I did, I guess, my decision was the opposite of that, which was, I'm so tired of having this conversation that I'm just going to go ahead with another round.
Yeah. That was actually what Mr. Gabby suggested. He was like, why don't we just throw one back in and see what happens? I'm like, because that's, you know,
huge commitment.
That's a huge commitment, expensive, and a bit of a decision. I really wish that I could have gotten to the end of this series and had more clarity on what I was going to do, but as it stands, the daily flip-flop is continuing and I just don't know which way it's going to go.
Well, the great thing about having embryos, and I guess one of the few privileges that IVF affords some people, is that in many ways the ticking clock has been removed for you. Those embryos are frozen in time, so you have 3 chances at pregnancy, and as long as you are still menstruating, you could still have a baby.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, the quality of those embryos is not reducing, whereas if you were trying for a baby naturally, the quality of your eggs would be reducing all the time, and the quality of Mr. Gabby's sperm.
Yes, this is true. About. Yeah, it is true. And it's, you know, I am having quite a few conversations with friends as well recently who are kind of also trying for a second and who aren't in the same position as me because they haven't been through IVF. In one way, they're very lucky. In other ways, I realise... In the main way, the most important way, they're quite lucky. But I am aware that I'm kind of not facing the same ticking time, you know, that other people are, which is good. It is good. It means I can continue to flip-flop, but it's exhausting, isn't it? Like, I literally change my mind every day.
Yeah, it is really exhausting. And it's literally why I went into my second round, because I was like, I can't take it anymore.
Decision made. Maybe what I'll do is... My next line in the sand will be, just, you know, when you have yours, I might just see how I feel about that.
Oh, mate. Well, you know how I feel about babies generally.
I don't know. I don't know. This is it. Anyway, I'm going to shut up now because it's not very interesting or, you know, or particularly helpful. Oh, the other thing is, if anyone is watching or not watching Bad Sisters, there is an infertility storyline in that I was like, oh yeah, okay. And because it's very much subplot. It's not the main plot at all.
Well, yeah, it's almost not a plot at all, and that's why I quite like it, because she can't have kids. Done.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's quite nicely handled, I think, in the moments where it gets close to emotive about it. It's quite realistic. But
absolutely. I like, so the, I don't think I'm giving away anything when I say the main character is a prick, and he is in fact known as the prick.
Yeah.
And he says very prickish things about it.
Oh, it's awful. Yeah.
And really. It just does make you seethe.
Anyone watching it must be like, oh, hate him even more. You don't need to go on continuing to layer up the hatred. Exactly. He's done enough now. But it's very good if anyone wants to watch it. And it's not like, I don't think it's too triggering in a kind of sad way. I think it's just another kind of nice, it's also Sharon Horgan, who can do absolutely no wrong in my eyes. So yeah, it's a good one.
Oh, I can't bear it now. It's too much. It's getting too much for me.
Bad Sisters is getting too much. Okay.
Yeah, right. It's like, because in the last one, we thought an outcome had been achieved that had not been achieved.
Yeah.
And I just, I literally, when I thought the outcome had been achieved, I went to bed feeling so much more relaxed.
Yeah.
And now I feel less relaxed.
Well, feel free, folks, to tune in and feel the same level of anxiety around this program as we are. Anyway, enough about me, my lack of decision and my television choices. How are you, Emma?
I'm all right. I'm just kind of plodding on, really. I don't really have an awful lot to share with you, other than, yeah, I've been doing an awful lot of work recently, and that is why this podcast is a day late.
Yes.
For which we apologise, but mainly I apologise. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's getting to a point where the embryo conversation is going to be had in my house as well. And it's interesting because I got a message from a friend this morning who was saying that she'd been listening to the last episode, and she told me that her clinic had sent her a letter recently, having tried to like contact her not that hard, that said, you're impossible to contact. If you don't pay for your embryos now, we will destroy them. Which is basically the opposite of every single thing that I've heard about this stuff. Like, I've phoned my clinic before because every year I have to chase up my embryos and chase up the bill.
Okay.
And every time I phone them, they say, oh yeah, we would never destroy them. We'd really check with you. We'd have to, you know, have a big conversation with you and blah, blah, blah. We'd send you loads of letters. Mm. And then obviously, when we were talking to Natalie last week, she said she had to fill in loads of forms.
Mm. And Millie, also the embryologist, was talking about how sensitively they handle these situations.
Absolutely. So it's a bit of a surprise, really, that her clinic sent her that letter. But she said she immediately phoned the finance team because it was signed off, the finance team. She immediately phoned them and was like, what the fuck? And they were like, oh, yeah, this is like a letter that it's a new letter that we started sending out. And the finance team was really like 50-50 about whether or not we should send it. She was like, maybe don't send it then.
Yeah. Basically, half of them are cunts. And yeah. Half of them are not.
Yeah. My God. I was absolutely like, quite surprised by that, to be honest.
No, that's no good. That's really not very good at all. So if anyone's listening, no to that kind of thing, please, guys. It's a tricky one. I just keep playing the vape, keep paying.
Yeah, and I think that's what I will do. And
do you
again,
pay yours in a yearly sum, annual cost? Yeah. Do you?
Yeah. Why? What do you do?
Direct debit, mate. Once a month.
Once a month? How much are you paying a month?
£26.
Wow, I'm £300 a year. Does that mean I'm paying less?
I don't know. No. My maths isn't good enough.
Oh, that's funny. I've not heard of that before. I thought it was just annual.
Yeah. No. Which makes £26 is kind of like meh. It's like,
A subscription.
Yeah, exactly. That you haven't got rid of yet. Exactly. It's like it's not significant enough for it to be an issue for me.
I had a big clear out of subscriptions recently, actually.
Oh, that's a good idea. Is that because of the cost of living crisis?
Yeah, got rid of Gusto.
Gusto.
My eating has become much worse since then.
This is like an anti-advert. Got rid of Gusto. Oh. Got rid of HelloFresh.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not an anti-Gusto advert. Gusto is great. It's just marginally too expensive for me.
Mm. As soon as the latest series of Game of Thrones finishes, I'm going to cut Now TV out of my life.
Now TV, that's a big, that's a strong one. But they have the best dramas.
Do they, though?
I don't know.
There's so many at the moment. I'm like, I only ever go to it for Game of Thrones, so.
Do you? But what about that one that we watched that was like a, it was like Downton Abbey, but in the US?
Oh, yeah. What's it called? What about that Gilded one? The Gilded Age.
Yeah. And what about Bad Sisters, actually? Isn't that on now? Or is that on Apple?
That's Apple TV, mate.
I cut Apple, actually, but.
Oh, I think Apple TV is the strong one for me.
Well, it's good, but my mum just shared her subscription with me. We've got a bit of a family thing going on, so I share my Disney and Now subscriptions with my mum, and she gives me Apple.
Well, there you go, guys. That's another cost-saving tip for this winter. Share your subscriptions with your family.
Yeah. Anyway, enough of this fascinating talk.
I know, what a way to end the series.
Well, I guess this is the end, Gabs.
This is the end. This is the end for now. And yeah, guys, we're always around, as you know.
Yes, we are.
So do hit us up on any of our platforms if you'd like to speak to us. We're not going away.
Yeah.
And we will be back with, I'm sure, news of further projects at some point.
Yes, we will. Big thanks to all our guests this season. Why do I keep saying season? This series. I really think it's been a vintage one.
It has. It has been vintage. Big thanks to everyone. Big thanks to Professor Tim.
As always.
For all of his ongoing guidance.
Yeah, and just big love to all of you. I hope everything goes okay.
Huge love to all of our listeners. We adore you. And we will speak soon.
We sure will. See you later.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.